It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Efforts are still underway to clean up the toxic mess that occurred in East Palestine, Ohio, following a train derailment that spilled hazardous chemicals in the small town of 4,000 people.
Nearly 50 cars derailed in the small town on Friday, February 3rd. An immediate evacuation order followed.
Today, the CEO of Norfolk Southern testified before a state Senate subcommittee in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
It is clear from this incident that we can always improve upon safety.
There are new concerns tonight about contaminated drinking water.
Stunning new video is raising questions about the condition of rail cars involved in the fiery train derailment that happened last week in Ohio.
Two Pennsylvania residents have filed a federal lawsuit after a train derailment near the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, the train carrying toxic chemicals.
A report from the National Transportation Safety Board confirmed that the Norfolk Southern train started in Madison, Illinois, near St. Louis, with a destination of Conway, Pennsylvania. It's not yet known the exact path the train took to get to Conway or to try to get to Conway, but if it had followed the most direct route on Norfolk Southern tracks, it would have passed through Decatur and just south of Champaign before continuing east through Indiana and Ohio. The response to the East Palestine train derailment has prompted concerns here in Illinois about what the response to a derailment and chemical spill could look like, especially given Illinois' position in the U.S. rail network. Illinois is the only state in which all seven Class I railroads operate, and it has the second largest rail system in the nation, behind only Texas. And Illinois is no stranger to this kind of danger. Sarah in Rockford sent us a text message saying, "It's already happened in our community. Years ago, ethanol cars derailed and exploded in Cherry Valley. My mom was caught in the derailment. She got out, but her car was totaled. I trust the rails to keep their interest. We already have better legislation for safer rails, but we're not enforcing or enacting them fast enough." A recent investigation by WTTW-TV, the PBS station in Chicago, found that since 1998, there have been 148 train derailments involving hazardous materials across Illinois. It's worth noting that it has been trending downward. The number of hazardous materials derailments has been cut in half over the past decade. The reporter behind that story is Jared Rudicky, investigative reporter and producer for WTTW and their program Chicago Tonight. He joins me now. Jared, welcome back to the 21st show.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Also with us are two members of emergency management agencies from across Illinois. Kathy Beck is director of the McLean Agency, while John Dwyer is coordinator of the Champaign County Agency. Kathy and John, welcome to you both to the 21st show.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Jared, I'm going to begin with you. Can you just talk a little bit more about your investigation and what your reporting found?
Yeah, and you sort of started at the main point that this state and the area, particularly Chicago, but all the way across the state, really is a transportation nexus for the country. There's goods going through here. You have major air connections, road that can take goods all the way across the way. And this is sort of why you end up looking at rail here, particularly following the East Palestine disaster. I looked at the data behind trains and hazmat, and I saw that the train obviously left an environmental disaster in its path. Here in Illinois, the most common incidents are small leaks in train yards. You see a lot of stuff. Somebody fails to close a valve and something leaks and they have to make a cleanup for it. Less common, but often more problematic, are the derailments, which in many parts of the state have come very close to polluting drinking water and harming protected wildlife. It's concerning for the residents who live here.
John, I want to bring you into the conversation. Champaign County hasn't had any reported hazardous material spills in the past, near 25 years. What do you attribute that? Because anyone who's driven through Champaign knows that there are plenty of rail cars moving through all the time.
The railroads keep improving their infrastructure. They keep improving their rail cars. Even a couple years ago when we had a Pisotum train derailment, where a number of cars went off the tracks. The cars themselves were intact and no chemicals spilled from the cars. Even though that there were several cars that actually went off the rail. And that's what a derailment means. It doesn't have to be a fire or whatever, but a derailment means the rail car itself has left the track. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a big accident. It could be one car that's off the track constitutes a derailment. And the railroads do a lot of outreach with our first responders. Matter of fact, last year, CN hosted a rail safety class for our first responders. It was over 3 hours in person about different aspects of what it, how to read the placards, how rail cars are set up, who to call, and how they respond to an incident as well. Because it was interesting that even with the Pasodum derailment, the folks from CNN that were involved were people that we had talked to or met with years before. Because I always like to say, accidents aren't the time to hand out business cards. So what happened as far as a response and recovery was supposed to happen. And we were lucky that no train car seals were broken. It did take time to get the rail back in order, but they were in constant communication with the community about what was going on and when things would be somewhat back to normal.
You know, you said the word lucky in there, and I wonder what is the role of luck in these incidents? You mentioned that,
I don't know. It's just one of those things that, things happen. But like I said, with the improvements in some of the rail cars, maybe it wasn't luck, but they're able to withstand, high pressures and things like that. And people forget that the same chemicals are being transported every day on the highway. And the containers aren't to the same standards as they are on rail cars, believe it or not.
I want to come back to that point about the highways. But first, I want to bring Kathy back into our conversation, director of the Emergency Management Agency in McLean County. I understand that McLean County saw a hazardous material spill involving, isopropyl alcohol? Can you talk about the response to that and how the county contained it?
It was a bad day in McLean County that day. We happen to have a top-notch hazmat team here in our county with one of our fire departments. So they were quick on the ball and identified it. And it was such a small spill that they were able to contain it really quickly.
What does that actually look like? And how could it have gone a different way, right? If maybe it hadn't been contained so quickly, what were some of the risks that people had on their minds as they were responding?
The risks, and they actually ended up having to evacuate a small area, and it was student housing. We have the Illinois State University here, and it happened right next to student housing. And then there was a fire within a couple of hours in the same block, not having anything to do with the train derailment. But had it gotten into the waterway, had there been toxic fumes or anything like that, it would have been a whole lot worse. Trying to evacuate a bunch of college students when we're talking hundreds and even thousands, and then putting them up in a place to stay because it was January and it was really cold. So all of that has to be taken into account, as well as the responders being out in the cold and, being able to relieve them and make sure that they're all safe as well.
And were there lessons learned from that spill in McLean County? Things that maybe
there's thought, always lessons yeah. learned. I've been in emergency management almost 7 years, and this is the first derailment we've had in that time period. So this isn't something that we have often, but it is something that wakes you up and says, we need to train on this more. We need to plan for this more. We need to exercise on this more. And we are working on that.
So Jared, I want to ask you, so we've been talking about the local response. What is the state's role when there's one of these incidents?
So the state has a couple of roles in this. The Illinois Commerce Commission tracks this as one of the agencies. So they're tracking essentially leaks for hazardous materials, leaks, other pieces. As the severity level goes up, other agencies begin to get involved. Obviously, when there's pollution of the air, ground, or water supply, the EPA gets involved. There are other agencies that kind of track this. And, you know, the state sometimes can also provide resources depending on where or how rural something happens in. Obviously, there's some level of oversight. There's state legislation involving staffing on railroads that Illinois has kind of to keep more people on the trains for safety purposes. That isn't a national standard at this point. That's probably the main piece of the state. And obviously, a number of legislators and things and at the General Assembly who have a vested interest in their communities, obviously, being safe from these particular incidents.
So, John, I want to ask you, as you were watching how things unfolded, John Dwyer with the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, as you watched this unfold in East Palestine, Ohio, what was going through your mind? What were you sort of taking notes, taking lessons on how they responded, thinking of what would that be like here?
A little bit. I'm waiting for more information to come out. I'm hoping they do a after action report to say what went well and what didn't. So there's a lot of stuff that we don't know what's being reported. The railroads have reached out to us about free training for our responders within the last month and a half. So they've been very proactive about, you know, what to do before we have an incident, about education and training. So that's been shared with our first responder community. And then I'm working with one of the railroads again to host that rail training in person for our first responders here in the near future.
Kathy, what about you? Does Kathy Beck in McLean County, do you have this sort of level of communication with the railroads that John is describing in Champaign?
We do. I've actually reached out to several of them. So some have emailed me, and we just scheduled a training for April with CN. So they're going to be coming and providing training to all of our first responders that are available to attend.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation today. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the risk of train derailments, and specifically derailments that result in hazardous material chemical spills like the one that we saw in East Palestine, Ohio. Since 1998, there have been 148 train derailments involving hazardous materials across Illinois. That's according to a report from the PBS station WTTW in Chicago. And the reporter behind that story is Jared Rutecki, who joins us for our conversation today. Also, Kathy Beck, from the McLean County Emergency Management Agency, and John Dwyer with the Champaign County Agency, emergency management there as well. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. Jared, I want to ask you about something that came up earlier in the conversation, and you do sometimes hear this about, well, there's semi-trucks on the road that are carrying worse stuff, and maybe they're carrying it less safely. How should we think about that risk when compared to what the railroads are driving through our communities?
Yeah, and this was a key defense for the rail companies, and their arguments are not invalid. They are correct. There are a way higher number of accidents. The accident rates involving hazardous materials transported by trucks are much higher. Because of the size of the load being traveled, you rarely see the kind of big dramatic explosions on roadways like you saw in East Palestine, Ohio. But there is validity to the argument that rail transport is safer, that it has gotten safer over time. You know, the counter argument for obviously people who live along these lines has a lot to do with what the immediate risk is. And in some of these instances, only needing to make one single mistake before something catastrophic occurs.
Right. You don't imagine that, unless it's, I don't know, carrying nuclear waste or something like that, a semi-truck crashing is going to require the evacuation of an entire city, perhaps, the way a really bad train derailment could.
Right. And part of it is how communities are developed. This really has been a plan for a long time, that you build communities around rail service, people who are commuting, goods that are being transported. A lot of major cities have the train transport going directly through the middle of the city. And as you've built homes and businesses alongside these routes, it has increased the number of people who are at risk on these sorts of train routes.
Yeah, and we actually got a text message about that from Charles in Champaign, who said, freight trains are more frequent and travel at higher speeds through Champaign. No, I do not trust local authorities to be able to respond. Many new businesses are located on Neal Street in what was a buffer zone. We need to take a break on our program, but we're going to come back and ask about that. How protected are people who live near railroad tracks? If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455 is the number to call in. That's 800-222-9455, especially if you live near railroad tracks in your community. Do you feel safe with the way the railroads are conducting themselves in those areas? Do you trust your local officials are prepared to respond to these incidents? 800-222-9455. Maybe you just have a question about what officials are doing to prepare for these sort of incidents. 800-222-9455. More to come here on the 21st show after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the risk of rail derailments here in Illinois. Illinois has is the only state with all of the major railroads operating within our borders. We have the second largest rail system in the nation, behind only Texas. And since the late 1990s, there have been 148 train derailments involving hazardous materials across Illinois. Many of those may not be as severe, certainly, as the East Palestine, Ohio derailment that inspired our conversation today with its major toxic chemical spill and fire and requiring major evacuation of that town. But this is something that people are paying attention to a little more than they might have a couple of months ago. We're talking about this with Jared Rutecki, who is an investigative reporter and producer with Chicago Tonight from the PBS station WTTW in Chicago, who wrote a piece looking at, and that's where that stat comes from, the number of train derailments in Illinois since the late 1990s. We're also talking about this with two emergency managers. Kathy Beck is director of the McLean County Emergency Management Agency. McLean County is where Bloomington Normal and Illinois State University are located. And John Dwyer, coordinator of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency. Champaign, of course, home to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And John, I want to ask you, because one of our listeners, Charles in Champaign, I mentioned that text message, was worried about the new businesses located on Neal Street in what was a buffer zone. Are businesses too close to the tracks, or residences even?
That's a planning and zoning question.
Sure.
That's a regulation or a local ordinance that they deal with. You know, everybody wants to be close to where people congregate. That's something that's a personal choice if they want to build a business there or get a permit for that. That's something that the city's planning or the county, city's planning, zoning, and the county planning and zoning are going to have to address.
Yeah. Yeah. Kathy, is that something that you keep an eye on in McLean County, the sort of proximity of businesses and residences to railroad tracks?
It's our zoning department's issue as well.
Okay.
We have close to 200 miles of rail tracks in our county, so it's not really possible to not be near them.
Yeah. And I don't mean to imply that these are unique situations to Champaign or Bloomington Normal. I lived in Springfield for many years and lived right on the railroad tracks, middle of the night. Definitely knew that for a number of years.
I live on them as well.
Yeah. It'll wake you up in the middle of the night. Jared, from your reporting, which rail company has the most hazardous spills in Illinois?
So what we found, and I guess it's kind of you pointed the difference between the two, that there are, you know, leaks and then there are derailment releases. This is kind of counting all of these, but the companies you see with the most releases, number one was BNSF Railway. Obviously, these are all kind of class ones. A lot of cases with Union Pacific. Almost all of the large train companies had a number of releases. You kind of get a lot of these. Big company owns a slightly smaller company that's operating on their behalf. So you see a lot with Illinois Central, out and then Southern. You had CSX Rail there. You had even Norfolk Southern, obviously the train company involved in the East Palestine derailment has a number. And all of these companies have 25 or more hazardous materials releases over the couple of decade time period.
And what was the geographic distribution of the derailments with hazardous spills in Illinois?
Yes. So what you see is areas closest to major rail centers have the highest number of hazardous materials releases. Kind of makes sense. Obviously, you have more trains there, so you're going to tend to have more releases. Chicago and East St. Louis were the two places in Illinois with the most cases in terms of hazardous materials releases, but they were spread all the way throughout the state. You had kind of double-digit releases in Cook County, Madison County, St. Clair County, all in double digits over the last couple decades. You had multiple releases in, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood. I'm trying to think of what the count was. We were in about close to 40 counties throughout the state where you were seeing everything released. You had a lot of different cities throughout the state. You had East Chicago, or East St. Louis, rather, a lot in Galesburg, a lot in a number in Decatur, almost 10 releases. So, you know, they spread them all over the place. Part of it is the leaks are very easy to predict because they typically happen in the train yards versus the derailments, which can happen anywhere along the tracks. So those tend to be a little bit more geographically distributed.
Did you learn anything about the causes of the derailments? I just noticed, I heard a news story this morning, I think, on public radio about in California, there was one that seemed to be related to this major storm they're experiencing, a downed tree or something like that.
There's a few of them, and they tend to be, you know, the causes can kind of be all over the place. Sometimes it's operator error. Obviously, you had the case in Ohio that was an overheated bearing that drove the trains off of the tracks. There's a number of factors at play, but not really one single cause that's like, this is the thing we really got to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. I want to share another text message we got. This was from an anonymous person in Urbana that said, my main concern is the relaxing of safety regulations on railway companies that seem to have been one cause of the crash. Profit over safety. I'm concerned about the safety of transporting dangerous chemicals and hope that Illinois has state regulations that are more stringent than current federal ones. I know somebody spoke briefly to that earlier. Kathy, can you speak to Illinois state regulations on rail cars and how those maybe are more stringent than federal regs?
I cannot speak to that.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was Jared who mentioned that then.
Yeah, I talked a little bit about it. It's essentially the criticism at the federal government has been a lot that Congress has to agree to do a lot of this stuff. It's a federal matter. These trains are traveling through multiple states. So even Illinois just passing a regulation isn't going to fix it as soon as the train crosses the border to Indiana, or Missouri, or Wisconsin. So you get kind of a limitation there. I think what a lot of people have also been critical about is actually knowing what's on these trains and when they pass through. There's not a great deal of transparency before these things happen. The people of Ohio were unaware that a polymer vinyl chloride was going through their town when it was going until it had actually come off the tracks and started pouring black smoke into the air. So I think people think that there's a lot to be done there. Obviously, local regulators can do what they can do, but it's tough to kind of make a change at the federal level when a train's just passing through your town for, you know, 5 minutes or whatever else.
Let's go to the phones. We have Louis or Louie in Effingham on line four. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. I'm a truck driver, so I kind of see this from a different perspective. Like, I have to be able to keep both ends of my load in sight at all times. I've got to be able to see the back of my truck. For just exactly the same problem that happened with this Palestine train, if I have a problem with an axle or a brake, I have to be able to see that at the very back of my load. Trains shouldn't be able to get away without doing the same thing. And then another thing that I run into a lot is that there's a lot of places I can't go with a hazardous load. A lot of towns have a bypass route, and I'm not allowed into the center of town. And a lot of towns, they're just, you can't go through there. You have to take a route that goes around town, but it's not a, you know, a dedicated bypass. And I don't see any reason that we can't require railroads to build some bypass routes and get out of town. And then the most important one to me is I can't drive faster than my sight distance. In other words, if I see something in the way ahead of me, I have to get stopped before I get to it. And there's no reason that trains should get away with the whole, oh, it's a train, it's heavy, I can't stop in time. They can stop in time, they just got to go slower. Any thoughts on those three matters that I find deeply troubling?
Yeah, Louis, that is a lot to think about. I appreciate your perspective on that. I guess even in the era when trains did have a caboose, probably still pretty difficult to keep the entire train in sight during that. Jared, I don't know, did any of these things come up in your reporting on this story?
I mean, I think that echoes a lot of the conversations that residents of the town who are opposing the merger in Illinois between the two large companies here, Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern. Like, they asked a lot of questions and sort of felt like they didn't get a lot of answers about, like, why does this have to go through my town? Why can't it take another? I mean, my guess on that is that developing rail is very expensive. I mean, so, you know, they've got a decent amount of influence that's going to keep them from doing that. But yeah, the sort of oversight is definitely something you hear from labor, who says, you know, we need more people on these trains, not less. And I think the people in the communities also had a lot of opposition to the size of the trains, which was the big one. It increases train traffic, both in the number of trains going through, and in some instances makes the trains larger, which can have a sort of more dangerous situation going on when you're really taking it apart.
Hmm. You know, John, one thing I wanted to ask you that came up earlier in the conversation, and John Dwyer from Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, how long would it take you to find out what was on a train? That was something that came up. Somebody said, you know, the residents of East Palestine didn't know what was going through their community until it was spilling out of the cars. How does that mechanism work from your standpoint?
There are apps that you can be vetted as a first responder. It's called Ask a Rail, where you can see what's on the train. Also, every train engineer, conductor has a consensus about what they're transporting.
So you get in touch with the engineer, assuming they're, you know, not injured in the incident, and then they'll be able to tell you, or you have this app. Okay. Kathy Beck, any final thoughts for people who are listening to this and maybe nervously eyeing the train full of tanker cars passing in front of their vehicle at this very moment somewhere in Illinois, I would guess?
There's really nothing that can be done to prevent accidents. There's just mitigation to reduce them and to be able to better respond to them. And the exercise and the training and the planning, those are all things that all emergency managers do for their counties, and the cities that have their own do that as well. It's what we live every day.
Sure. Kathy Beck, John Dwyer, and Jared Rutecki, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us.